It's Monday, June 9th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 342 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 5 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Chris.
All right, let's see what we got on tap today. First of all, Reign of the Descendants. This is something that was put together for me.
It's raining descendants. Hallelujah.
It's raining descendants.
This is why we do not do karaoke at most Fear the Boot events.
That's very true.
I apologize, Stacy. But Reign of the Descendants, a while back, if you guys will remember, Fear the Boot sponsored this just in from Gen Con. We ourselves did not run it, but we sponsored the people that were. And they had a series of backer awards in the funding drive for that. And since we took top slot, they said, what do you guys want? And I said, well, what I want, because they were putting forth a custom expansion to the role-playing game Mecha. And so I said, what I want is an Invid Invasion type game, you know, human resistance.
Is this a air quotes type game?
Sure.
Okay.
As in, don't sue a Sunbow?
Yes.
Or Harmony Gold. That'd be Harmony Gold, not Sunbow. Right. Yeah. Sunbow did G.I. Joe and Transformers such. But anyways, point being, they put together a really outstanding game. It is dedicated to the listeners and to the community of Fear the Boot. Mm-hmm. And it's a great game. It's an expansion to the RPG Mecha. And it basically introduces enough things to give you that feel of a role-playing game without outright ripping off the IP. Right. So if you guys are interested in that, and I saw it today and I thought it was awesome, I will put a link in the show notes both to the base Mecha game and also to the expansion that they just made custom for me. But once again, this thing is actually dedicated to our community. So it's dedicated to you guys. So take a look at that. Next thing we need to talk about is, of course, Fear the Con, because as of the release of this episode, we are less than a week away from the tourism and just over a week away from the Wing Night and then the con itself. So a couple things on that we'll knock out real quick. First of all, if you are coming down early for the tourism, we will be doing tourism this year. I apologize for not being more specific with the plans earlier on, but the big issue that I've been having is I switched jobs a little while back and
go-go dancers have rough hours.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Boxers and briefs is running me ragged.
Yep. It sure is.
And so getting time off is, I wasn't sure how it was going to work, but fortunately Scott Bonner and possibly some other people have agreed to step up to help fill the gaps whenever I'm unable to be there. So there will be tourism this year. Same thing as always. We'll meet in the hotel lobby of the Drury Inn at 10 a.m. We will start on Sunday and we will continue it every day until the time the weeknight starts on Thursday. If you need contact information, check the show notes for a link to the forum where you can find Scott's cell phone number, or you can PM me for mine, and one of the two of us will be able to catch you up with whatever's going on.
So you're not just going to put your number out there on the forum for everybody to have?
I didn't make Scott put his there.
I was going to say, can we just call him up and say, hey, baby.
We should call Scott right now.
We could, actually, if I was ever going to just random dial somebody into the show, it would be John.
Yes.
Remember the plans we had to call the DL?
Yes. The D&D helpline. But yeah. I think they closed it down.
I would hope so.
But yeah, we always wanted to call the D&D helpline with a gaming emergency. Mm-hmm. All right. The other thing is, as always, if you're coming to the con, which of course we hope you are, and we know that a pretty good number of you are, we look forward to seeing you there in a couple days. I just want to remind everyone, as always, show the world what gamers can do. Be polite, be respectful, have a great time, be courteous, be safe. Don't
flip a table.
Flip a table, pee on the walls.
Beer, rage quit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Rules lawyer every time, every chance you get.
Slenderman jokes probably won't be twirly by the time Fear the Con comes around.
Too soon.
But right now it's too soon, so we got to let that one go. Mm-hmm. Unless we're talking about the Bane plays, in which case it can be funny again. But yeah, so don't make jokes like that in front of an audience of people. But also, Stacy, thank God, will be with us again this year. As we always say, take care of the people that take care of you. Please do tip them generously, because of the fact that the money goes, I believe, 100% to Stacy's daughters for their various activities and things like that. So take care of the people that are taking care of you. Please be, you know, good to those around you. And we look forward to seeing you for another great Fear the Con. Let's talk gaming, yo. Chad,
you're so hip.
I am.
Kids.
My goodness, your gangsta is just killing me right now.
Wow. I can't understand this hip lingo all the kids are talking about these days.
Is that Dan Bonics you're speaking? What is that?
So, Chad.
Yes.
Give me the slow flow.
The slow flow. My slow flow is remarkable, even though I flubbed that. So, I want to talk about something that happened to me over the past 2 weeks.
Chad, it's not your fault. Okay. That's what you have to remember.
No,
first
it
of
totally
all.
Totally is my
it
fault.
It is not your fault. You
wonderful.
Cannot blame yourself.
The Lifetime original movie.
Yeah.
Chad.
That's right.
Jazz hands.
Philip Seymour Hoffman would have played Wayne.
It's not about an outcast. It's about a podcast.
Poor bros and their bromance together.
That is going to have to be a game at Fear the Con some year, or maybe a forum contest. I don't know, because actually I do have some
Fear the Boot, the role-playing game?
No.
The bromancing?
No. If there was a Fear the Boot movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can post video clips, pictures of us, whatever, so people get some sense of kind of what we look like, because everyone seems to think I'm like 350 pounds or something.
That's right.
Which,
for everyone thinks you're me and I'm you. Because I don't have the deep bedroom voice,
no,
but I'm the big guy.
The few people that have been able to tell me what it is they thought I should look like, so they thought I should just be this enormous barrel-chested, bearded man, which I'm not. I'm a tall, skinny, clean-shaven guy. But the point being that I'm curious who would play us in Fear the Boot, the movie.
Right.
Because we've been optioned for a movie.
Oh, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Totally. Yeah. Dan, you're going to be played by Benedict Cumberbatch because he's tall and skinny.
Benedict Cumberbatch?
But Cumberbatch?
Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch. Cucumber Patch.
Uh-huh.
Benedict Cucumber Bun.
Nice.
Because he's tall and he's skinny. He's got dark hair. He's got cheekbones like a great cheese.
Right. So I want to know who
and
would
he has
play
a great voice.
All right. Yeah. But anyway, so back to your topic.
Back to my topic. So anyway, as kind of a little bit of a setup, a couple of months ago, Dawn and I, well, we were kind of doing our normal thing. We were sitting around. She was playing The Sims. I was playing like Civ or Payday or something like that. And our computers are in the same room. And Sky was downstairs playing Minecraft.
Okay.
And so we're just going about having fun. Well, you know, Dawn and I throw jokes and stuff back and forth to each other. Generally, actually, we just fart and laugh at each other.
Like all good marriages.
The thing is that we were sitting there and we're like, we both kind of came to this conclusion together, like almost at the same time. We're like, all three of us are kind of like really active and we have our interests and hobbies and we do stuff. Like, this is a pretty typical night for us. We don't really do anything together.
Yeah.
You know, all three of us together as a family. What had gotten me thinking of this, I had just gotten done reading an article about family nights, about people.
Right.
Actually, the only thing that I remember from the article is, you know, a lot of men, when they're like, oh, family night. Yeah, I'm going to be the man of the house. I'm going to organize the family. I'm going to do a family night. And in their mind, they get this sort of Leave It to Beaver thing where they're the wise dad and the family gathers around him and then he dispenses wisdom with his pipe.
It's the Clark Griswold.
Yeah.
You know,
whereas in reality, you have a bunch of teenagers who are like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Once again, it's the central punchline of the.
Yeah. Luckily, I don't have a teenager. I have a 7-year-old.
Right.
And Dawn is, it's not so much that she agreed to me. We came up with this together. We're both like, yeah, we don't do enough just together. We all get along and stuff, but we don't have activities together. And so we kind of bashed it out. It's like, we should have a family night where, and we made every Wednesday, no matter what, our family night.
Mm-hmm.
Computers are closed. Laptops are closed. We take our cell phones. We put the cell phones away. And it's a minimum 2-hour activity together. And we always go longer. But just to put, you know, barriers on it,
right,
we pair it to 2 hours minimum. And so what we do, it's like we've played board games. One night we had a Lego. We usually let Sky pick. We had like a Lego night because he's got 10,000 Legos. We brought a big tub of his Legos down, dumped 1,000 of them on the table, and we all just started building stuff. That was actually really cool to see what each person would build. We've had a couple of those nights. We got a couple of Lego board games because there's kind of this Lego Minecraft building theme in our
right,
family.
Sure.
So we play these Lego board games stuff. They're really cool. We play Uno. We go out to dinner. One night we went to this world market and we bought all kind of candy from all over the world and all kind of snacks and stuff. We just do different things like that. Well, one of the things that Dawn and I were talking about.
Can I just take a moment to say something here to the rest of the world? If you're American, you can go ahead and, you know, take off your headsets, walk around for 5 minutes, eat a cheeseburger, shoot something, whatever. But to the rest of the world, okay, most countries have, you know, a certain kind of spin to their cuisine. For example, as an American, I cannot handle the full heat of properly made Thai food or Indian food or even Mexican food or South American food. It is way too spicy for my palate. Now, in America, we have something similar where we are completely normal with it because it's how our diet is, but the rest of the world can't handle it, which is sweet. Ugh. Our stuff is extremely sweet, and the rest of the world typically can't quite handle that. So I just want to take a moment to say that just as American spicy food is weak and sucky, to the rest of the world, I love you guys, but your candy blows. Continue, Chad.
I love.
Have you ever had, like, sweets from India?
No, not from India specifically.
It's like vaguely fruit-flavored cardboard.
I've had Chinese sweets. I've had a lot of Japanese sweets. Japanese sweets are pretty sweet. Not as sweet as American stuff. I'm not a sweet person. I don't
Yeah, with
really,
flavors like we know. Ginger.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a sweet person at all. I don't like sweet people. Candy, people, bunny rabbits, that sort of thing.
Right.
I mean, I'm okay with it. I'm not like, oh, ice cream. But it's like right, I prefer salty, savory, spicy, especially spicy.
I'm with you.
But that's just me. So anyway, so we have this family night, right? And it's been going off like gangbusters. We've been having a really great time with it. And
get a lot of attendance.
So, yeah, well, you know, we've only missed one. We had a really bad day and everybody was sick and we're like, okay, we're just not gonna do it today. And then we've only had one skip in the 2 or 3 months.
2 hours of diarrhea does not count as a family activity.
No, it does not.
That's true.
So anyway, you know, Dawn's a role player, I'm a role player, and we're trying to raise Sky up to be our little nerdling. We asked Sky, I'm like, do you want to play a role playing game? Because he knows what a role playing game is, because we role play at Pat and Beth's house and we bring Sky with us and then we get a sitter for Sky and Pat's two children. And they're always coming. We game in the basement. They're always coming down. So they're aware of the activity. They kind of vaguely understand it. And Sky's like, oh, yeah, I do. And I'm like, OK, well, you're going to have to, you know, make a character and come up with a story. He's like, oh, yeah, that'll be great. That'll be fun. And so what I really thought about it, and I'm like, well, what are some of the things we could do? What, you know, it's like, do I run some weird crazy scenario? Do I run something very traditional, right, kidsy? What gaming system do I use? And so I actually had all those thoughts going through my mind because I decided that I was going to run it. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Let's pull this back here. What are the objectives that we're trying to do? And then we will mold everything around these objectives.
Let me frame this topic just a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
A while back, and this was a couple years ago, we did an episode on gaming with children. And I actually went out to the industry and actually asked an industry gaming industry mailing list to give me some suggestions of games that they have or have played or published or whatever that were meant for kids.
They were like Mega Traveler 2000.
Yeah.
Champions.
Champions. Yeah. No. And I'll relink that episode in the show notes if you want to go and listen to it. But the approach that we want to take here is a little bit different of actually kind of talking about the nuts and bolts of executing that, because I think there's something right now that at least three of the four of us are really just now reaching this point in our life. And the one I'm excluding is Chris, obviously.
So in other words, it's like every other episode.
So exactly. The guy with the most kids and the broadest age ranges of kids out.
Right. No, I think he's going to have great things to say. I mean, Chris's offspring are as innumerable as the sands of the seashore and the stars of the sky.
He's sown his seed far and wide in his ten like, millennia of life.
He's like a sprinkler.
God, he's making the sound effects.
Hey, in the meantime, you might want to stop Sky from playing Minecraft. True story. Do you know what the Enderman is based on?
The Slenderman.
The Slenderman, yeah. All right, so anyway, back from inappropriate our kids episode 2.
Yeah. Well, he's not 12 yet.
We have the sprinkler and the Enderman. So, all right. the thing that the three of us have in common is Chad, you with Sky.
Yes.
Pat, you with Duncan and Connor. And then me with my nieces and nephews. And then also the kids of some of the people that I game with or have gamed with in the past and will likely game with again, like Scott Bonner. These kids are all about the same age.
Right.
And the age they're at is, look, it's fairly natural.
2001 was a good year.
Apparently so.
But it's, or boring, depending on how you want to look at it.
But the thing about kids in general is they want to emulate the things they see the people around them doing. I remember when I was a kid, I saw daddy shaving. And so they gave me a disposable razor with the blades removed. This is where we could screw the blades in and out of it.
Old timey.
Yeah, it's kind of an old time, like 1970s or 80s sort of one. And I would put shaving cream on and pretend to shave, right? Because I want to do what daddy's doing. Thank you, Pat.
Well, you know, I listen, I mean, I certainly come from the same Pat angle as that for what you're saying, but in all honesty, shaving in that way when you're a kid, badass. It's awesome. Oh, I did it as well.
It is, but...
You feel, you're a six-year-old, and you feel just like the most badass person in the world because you got this big old shaver and you're scraping off that stuff. No, I disagree
because it is the removal of beard. And there's nothing badass about that. Your father did wrong.
Yes.
Look at you now. You have no beard. Chris, do you have a beard now?
I do have a beard now.
Pat, you have a beard?
Yeah.
Do I have a beard?
Yeah, goatee.
Dan, what do you have? You have 5 o'clock shadow. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have a word with your father.
Damn it.
Yes.
I have an international award-winning father.
Yes, you do. I mean, he hasn't gotten an Eddie. Yeah, yeah. I've never seen your... Man, your father would look pretty badass with a beard, actually.
Actually, he kind of could. But, all right, here's the point.
My dad used to look like the lead singer from Clutch when he had his beard going on.
I have no idea what that is.
I don't either.
Look my up dad, the lead singer Clutch. To Clutch. That's what my dad used to look like.
You want
to
know what my dad looked like? My dad looks like, not anymore, because he has like zero hair on his head, and he has a goatee
now.
He's
lost a lot of weight.
And he's lost a lot of weight, but when, I was about to say, when he was my dad, when, back in the day, when
back
Dan and I
before the episode of Maury.
Yeah. When Dan and I were kids, you know, he had more hair on his head, and it was a certain color, and he had a mustache.
Meatloaf.
Because he was Nady. No, Grover Cleveland.
Oh.
He looked exactly like Grover Cleveland.
All right, but so one of these days we'll get back to gaming. Huh.
Where is that train anyway? Let's get that back on the rails.
Choo-choo.
So focusing back in, like but they're laser. All at this age where they're interested in what dad, mom, uncle, aunt, as the case may be, are doing. They sit at the table. They want to play with the dice. They want to move the mechs around. They want to look at the character sheets. They want one of their own to draw on. But they are now reaching an age where they're actually old enough to sit down for at least a short period, keep the attention span, and understand some basic ideas. I'm not saying I could throw the full 3-5 rule book at any of them, but could they understand the basic ideas of assuming a role and playing a role-playing game? They've absolutely reached that age.
Yeah. They can read, they can write, they can do math.
I was actually...
They can tell stories.
Just as an example here... With my own eldest nephew, Eli, we were playing Pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
This was just a matter of weeks ago. And Eli is, I should know this, he's 6 or 7 years old. But here's the point.
The bad uncle.
Well, I think he's about the same age as Scott, so I think he's 7.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We were playing Pandemic, and he's like, oh, can I play with you? And we're like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah. Here's a card, here's a piece.
I gotta be honest with you, that's... when you're playing a board game, that's what you never want to hear when you have kids.
Yeah, and it's just like, we'll just play around and we'll let him put his piece somewhere and like, congrats.
Playing a board game with kids where that's the intention, oh, that can be fun, that could be great. But playing with adults where the kid's like, you know, and some kid comes down, we're all playing, and then it's like, I want to play. Oh, sure, little Timmy. And you sit down, I'm always like, oh, God.
Yeah, well, we figured, okay, whatever, we'll just let him move the piece and we'll just, whatever, yeah, we'll just play past him. Except for the fact, we never explain the rules to him.
Mm-hmm.
From watching us, he learned how to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to his turn, it wasn't like, and this is Pandemic. I mean, this is not the most complicated game in the world.
It takes a lot of coordination.
But it takes a certain amount of coordination. And he had the strategies down. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, I'm going to move my piece to this country and give Aunt Becca this card and then take this and go here. And we're all sitting there looking at each other like... What the fuck? Like, that is, in fact, exactly what you would do.
Yes. And so next game, he played the dispatcher.
Yes.
And you won.
And so my point, anyways.
Yes.
So
the point is that
they're at an age where they're old enough to get it.
And especially you look at little kids and you're like, oh, little kids, I love them. They're great. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. And they're kind of dumb. But they're not. necessarily. They just don't have a lot of experience. Their kids are actually very smart. They just don't have a lot of training and experience. So anyway, what I decided, or what I was thinking about, is like, okay, I need to have these design objectives here. Like, what are we trying to do with this, really? And one of the design objective is, okay, I want a system where he has to do math. So like a Jenga tower or just roll high wasn't enough. I want him to roll something, add that to another number, and then subtract another number to get a number that either needs to be higher or lower than another number. And so he has to work out an algebra problem. And so that he, unbeknownst to him, is learning how to do algebra. Another thing that I wanted to do is I wanted him to roll every kind of dice. So I didn't want it to be like, okay, well, we'll do a percentile system. We'll teach him percentiles. Well, that's just 2d10. I wanted it to be where he rolls all the different kind of dice. So damage is on one kind of dice and initiative is on one kind of dice. And, you know, this and that is on another kind of dice.
Design. Carla took the weather die from me, but... Mm-hmm. Oh, do I have it in here? No, I don't. I was going to give you my D30.
No, I've got, we've got D30.
D30s just don't get enough love.
They don't. Yeah.
And so what I decided was ultimately, it's like I want to write my own system for this, and I want it to be one page long, because that's another thing. I want him to read the rules. I don't want to teach him the game. I want him to read the rules.
Did you look at any of Stuart Robertson's Pocket Mod games?
Why would I do that? Because I'm an awesome award-winning writer.
Okay, fair enough.
I want the challenge
of
writing my own system and tailoring it to the group. And actually, right. I really messed up the system because I wanted it to have attributes. But I only wanted three attributes. I wanted to keep it really basic. I wanted, like, there was brains, sly, and muscles. And then you had,
pretty
like...
pretty close to Ultima.
Yeah.
Where you had brains, intelligence, and dexterity. Well, it was strength, intelligence, dexterity. But right. Yeah, pretty close to all.
And then you got to pick attributes. And then I designed it, too, to where, not attributes, but like abilities that you can use in combat. And there were like warrior ones and thief ones and magic ones. And
we'll
stuff.
Call them skills.
Skills, yeah.
Skills, traits, refinements, whatever you want to call them.
I also put in there to where you could really cheese the rules if you use different abilities in combination. You can get some really, really powerful combos if you kind of arranged it to
What was the objective there? Was the objective there to encourage him by giving him a sense of success, or was the objective there to hope he would ferret those out?
I wanted him to ferret them out. I wanted him to read the rules and kind of figure it out. And if he
not the rule system, yeah. But to see the system.
Right. Yes. And if he didn't
deduce and induce.
Yeah, and if he didn't deduce it, if he didn't see the system, that's okay, because Dawn and I are playing.
Right.
And so we could do that, and then he could see what we are doing. And I arranged it with Dawn. It's like, okay, we're not going to tell him this. I want to see if it clicks with him. It didn't. He didn't actually see that when he read the rules. But that was okay. And so anyway, another thing is that I want him to make the story of his character. And so when we sat down, we rolled out the attributes, we rolled up the characters and that sort of thing. I made up a character sheet. And the biggest parts of the character sheet were not the attributes or the equipment or anything like that. The biggest part of the character sheet were all the lines that you could write your character background on. That was another thing. I put lines on it because he needs to work on his handwriting. I want him to write his character.
Yeah, Chad, there is something I have not heard you say yet, and I am so glad for it. You have not said the phrase, I wanted him to become a gamer just like me. In your objectives, now you did say that earlier, you started trying to mold, but you actually said, my objectives for this game, and you started, all jokes aside, enumerating what you're really doing, I want him to imagine, I want him to learn math, I want him to pick up on trends, I want him to have a hand in shaping this. Your goals here are all focused on his enjoyment and his growth as a person, which in turn we hope will lead to him enjoying gaming.
Yeah.
You did not attempt to say, well, because daddy likes this.
Right.
In fact, you started off with saying all the things that don't involve math.
Yeah.
I mean, you pushed the Jenga tower out of the way. That's a big step for you.
I
you know what it sounds like to me that you're doing, Chad, is that you're in a sense trying to purposely recreate the exact same things that you initially discovered when you first started gaming. Mm-hmm. At least yeah. I would assume, because I learned some mathematical abilities in games. Mm-hmm. I also learned how to deduce and how to see that system and build from there. And then the fun came after that. But it was once I saw those foundational things, that's what came along.
Well, it's about letting him discover the gamer mm-hmm. he wants to be, not trying to make him little you.
Yeah.
The archetypal thing where dad tries to live out his life through the kids, mm-hmm. and so he pushes them really hard in sports or academics or whatever. Look, we as gamers mm-hmm. can do the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm so glad to hear that that's not the approach you're taking. Yep.
When it came time to write his character background, I was like, okay, well, how am I going to do this? Am I going to... Who are his parents and who are this and ask him a bunch of questions? And I'm like, no, I'm going to pull it back. I want to see if he gets it. And so what I did is I said, okay, now we need to write our character background. And what that means is who they are. And I explained to him, it's like, okay, in this game, you are not playing you. You are playing someone else. And now we need to think of, who is this person? Who are they? What are they like? What are they interested in? What do they do? And we start out like, what is your character's name? That's what I started out with. Because it's not Sky. What is your character's name? And he's like, he thought about it. He's like, my character's name is Chris. I'm like, okay.
Flip the table.
Flip the table. Oh,
failed experiment. Yeah.
So, and I'm like,
he's at an orphanage now.
Oh, totally.
And I'm like, well, what is he? And he's like, and Chris is a blacksmith. And
damn it, so close.
And he's a blacksmith for the king, and he makes all these weapons, and he has this blacksmith, and he starts going and going and going. And Chris has a dog, and it's like a bulldog, and it's really strong, and it's very cool. And he's going, he's just like blah 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 blah. He made a deeper and more interesting background than some adults I have played with. Now, that's not a high bar to jump, because I've played with adults who, like, their character is sprung from the earth and they're just a collection of statistics, but still, he's seven.
Life of the party until shit's the fan.
Right.
Actual written description from a character.
Yep. And that was
That was the entirety of it.
That was it.
It's descriptive. It's all you need to know.
So I asked him.
That was his personality and background. From capital letter, first letter to final punctuation, that was it.
Keep it simple, stupid.
When he when we started playing, he's like, he has this dog, and the dog's name was Spike. It's a big, strong dog, and it's just a really cool dog, and can do all this stuff. And I'm like, my thought was, is the dog with him or not with him? Because I'm not going to say he can't be with him. I'm just going to play the dog, you know, so to speak. And so I'm like, well, is the dog with you? And he's like, oh, no, the dog's not with me. Oh, okay. And I'm about ready to go on. He's like, the dog is out in the woods killing deer. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, because if the deer overpopulate, they'll get really sick. And so he's keeping the deer population down by hunting the deer and keeping them in control.
Oh, my God. He is fully qualified for a job at Blizzard.
And I'm like, wow. And I'm like, Dawn and I are like, okay. And so I ask him, Sky, how?
If you want to know the level of intellect it takes.
Oh,
Warcraft Quest.
So I'm like,
it is the head of a 7-year-old.
So I'm like, Sky, how is he killing these deers? And he's like, he has a sword.
He does.
He's like, yeah, it's a sword that Chris made him, and it's a dog sized sword, and he carries it in his mouth.
Yeah,
and
he does.
Kills the deer with a sword. I'm like, that's kind of cool, actually. This is badass dog out in the woods going crazy, and he's like a custodian of the lands and doing all this stuff, and he's just a dog. So
no way that's just a dog.
I know, right?
That dog has got to be like the avatar of some deity or some extra planar
being. Not my call.
Well, actually,
that's his call. It's his dog.
Let it fall out in the game. Absolutely, but there's no way that's just a dog.
That dog is awesome. And I'm like, okay, the dog's out in the woods. Keeping deer population under control. He's the warden of the forest. No problem.
And Dawn and I were like laughing, like, oh my God, a dog with a dog sized sword. We're like, I bet the hilt is like shaped like a bone and stuff. He carries it in his mouth. And Sky looked at us laughing. He's like, don't laugh at that. That dog's really cool. I love that dog. And we're like, okay, no problem. And he was getting into it. He was really getting into it. I actually had to kind of stop him and say, okay, well, you need to write, you know, your sentences here on the paper of about Chris. I made him write three sentences about Chris and who he was and that sort of thing. And because he had way more than three sentences, we would have been there all night. I actually had to stop him a couple of times going in the background. But, you know, another design sort of feature that I wanted in the game, too, was it was a fantasy game.
You know, there's another thing I want to draw out that you just did right there. You did not say yes to everything.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly gave him a wide berth.
Oh, yeah.
But there did come a point where you said, okay, that's enough. We need to stop here. Yes. And I think, really, in terms of teaching life lessons, passing on role-playing games, any of this stuff, if there's somebody you're trying to bring into this, I think just giving them a nice little check mark and trophy for everything they do is probably not the best idea.
Right.
Because, look, role-playing games, like everything else in life, they do have boundaries. Mm-hmm. There is that game side to the role-playing game. And things have to fit within a certain, you know, I realize different games allow different amounts of insanity, but every game has some degree of boundary to it.
Well, and one of the problems that he ran into sort of outside, I don't mean, oh, he found an orc and he couldn't beat it up. It was one of the meta problems that he kept running into was that he would say, okay, we come to a guard and we have to beat up the guard. And he's like, okay, I make the roll, I hit him, and then I hit him and he gets knocked out and all his teeth come out and he's not getting up and I really got him. And I'm like, whoa. Okay, no. We need to roll this out. We don't know what happens next. You can't.
Oh, I do. He puts his thumbs in his eyes and it goes bad from
well,
there.
And see, okay, so that was another design goal too. I didn't want this to be uber violent. I didn't want it to be sunshine and happiness because I believe that kids can take dark. And they can deal with these sorts of things. I just don't want to get gratuitous with it. So I had the setup. You were part of a kingdom. And Dawn was playing a hunter named Daisy, and she was the king's warden when actually the dog was the king's warden. Totally. But we don't talk about that. Sky was playing Chris the blacksmith, and I was playing this old wizard. What was his name? His name was like Engelbart or something like that. He has a really silly name. He's a very silly character. He's a senile wizard because I want a character in there so that I can lead by example. Because I don't want to say, Sky, pick up this die and do this in this situation. I want to be able to say, okay, well, what my character does...
Every morning, you don't see what spells you've learned. You see what spells you've forgotten.
Right, yeah. But I needed to make him senile and because he's silly. And that way, I have a very valid excuse for making him go away. Uh-huh. So that the other characters, especially Sky, can take over.
Or the dog. I mean,
or
really.
Or if they get in trouble... He can come in and help him out and then immediately go away so as not to steal the spotlight. And he can maybe do like a comedy thing to go away. But what I did as far as like the dark goes and kind of staying away from that is I said that there was a great war in the kingdom. And I didn't specify what the enemy was, but I'm like, there was a great war and it was very terrible. And it was a terrible toll that took place. And a lot of people died. And the king saw all the people who died in the land, and he became very sad, and he ended the war. And when he ended the war, he created a law, and that law said, no one shall kill in this kingdom. You are not allowed to kill. They can beat people up, and the king is old, and that's their setup, is that they are the heroes of the king. The king is old, and they dispense the king's justice. They go out in the name of the king and do these heroic things for him because he can't do them himself. And so not to get in too deep of a gaming story here, but the setup of the story was that there was a great feast. And I wanted to open up with a feast, because in a feast, you can do all these descriptions. You can describe the room and the castle and the food and the people playing and the merry men and all this sort of stuff. And the king, and he's making a speech, and I made the king very gregarious, and he's really old, but he's very gregarious. And, oh, ooh, let's have a feast and a toast and all this sort of stuff. And I can do the silly voices, and I can show Sky that the type of role-playing that we are doing is not the king says that he is making a toast. It is, and the king makes a great toast, and he says, oh, hail adventurers, and all that sort of stuff. Because I do want him to get into that kind of role-playing. So they have this feast, and the chef brings out dessert, and it's in these pans, right? These trays with the big domes over them. The waiters come out and such, and the chef is famed for his muffins, and he has these wonderful muffins, and everyone's like, oh my god, muffins, because Sky really likes muffins, and he's like, oh my god, I want a chocolate chip muffin, and they pull the domes off the trays, and the muffins are gone, and the adventure is the mystery of the missing muffins. They go question the chef, and there's all these crazy characters. They are following a literal trail of breadcrumbs. So they can go anywhere they want, but they know where to go.
That's a nice full circle, because that's where the metaphor of breadcrumbs comes from. Yeah. Is Hansel and Gretel, yep, with the actual breadcrumbs.
With the actual trail of breadcrumbs.
Which became a metaphor, and now you're pulling it right back to a literal.
And so what I did is I salted the path of the breadcrumbs with interesting characters.
Panko.
Yes. And so there was like the chef's assistant who was at the bottom of a well that was outside the kitchen. Last person who saw the muffins. And they had to fish him out. They had to figure that out. And they had to see who was down there, see if they could trust him, fish him out of the well, follow the breadcrumbs. There's the guard who is guarding the back entrance to the wall of the castle. There's like a side entrance there. And they had to roll like spot checks and notice he has breadcrumbs in his beard. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And oh, they dealt with that.
So they had been buttering his palms.
Yes. And they had to find out what they followed. More breadcrumbs than they came upon. And this was the total comedy. Sky likes pigs and animals, and he thinks pigs are funny. And he is a 7-year-old boy, so he likes farting, and farts are funny. So they came upon a pig pen filled with farting pigs.
Look, I'm 37 and farts are still funny.
Yeah, really. Yeah, dude, I'm 45 and they're still flipping hilarious. But, Chad, I want to jump in here because I want to ask, so how was Don, how much leadership did Don take in kind of driving these things? As you were leaving this trail of breadcrumbs and clues, how much did she have to participate to either try and keep things on track, or was this predominantly generated by Sky?
It was a team effort between Don and I to give Sky prompts. There was never a lack from him for doing something. You know how when you game with adults and you're running a game and they give you that blank stare and it's like you have all this great and cool stuff and and then you have all these adults and it's just like nothing. You get nothing and you hate it. It's like, did you screw up? Are they not engaged? Whatever. A kid, or at least my kid, he was always raring to do stuff, to where there were a couple points where I had to say, okay, I got it, little guy, I got it. You know, it's like, okay, you're going down the road. It's okay. Dawn gave prompts, because there were times when, like, okay, so they reveal the muffins and it's the cook's famous muffins and all the waiters come from the kitchen and they have the muffins and the muffins aren't there. King gives a quest, go find out who took my effing muffins. What do you do? Obviously, we're sitting here. It's like, okay, this is pretty basic. We go to the kitchen. That's where we're going to start. But he didn't quite get that. And he wanted to do something. He's like, yeah, let's go do the thing with the stuff. And so Dawn was like, I think that we should question the cook. And the Sky's like, yes, we should. And where's the cook at? Cook's in the kitchen. Then Sky gets this great idea. Let's go to the kitchen. And it's all his idea. And he has this little victory. And so
I think the most terrifying possibility is that the dog took the muffins.
Oh, God.
There's not a damn thing.
Yep.
We're just going to have to. Don't go there.
Yeah.
So
these muffins are gone.
So, yeah. And they're following this trail, right? And Dawn's doing little prompts. They question the guard. So that was the big thing, is the guard with the muffins on his face, because he got bribed with a muffin to let the thieves go. And so they beat him up and then they kind of menaced him, because Sky is playing Chris and Chris is this big guy who's a big blacksmith who has like he min-maxed his muscles and he is like huge guy. And he has this big battle axe, and he's just like, "Ooh, talking about muffins," and just like, "It was the bards," And the bar. Yeah.
Yes. Wayne.
Yes.
Yes.
So they like go out onto the road and they're trying to catch up to the bards, right? And so we have this combat and it's this multi-person combat. It's the first one we did where it was multiple people. And I think Dawn like wings an arrow at a guy and misses. And that sort of thing. Well, first it's this happens, this happens, this happens. Not much movement in the tactical combat, right? Sky rolls up and he's like, okay, can I flip over their cart? See, and that was great about it. It's just like, it wasn't target, attack, target, attack. It was, he wanted to do something. He's like, I want to flip over the cart or rip their wagon wheel off or scare the horse away or whatever. I'm like, okay, roll your muscles. You're a big, huge guy. Crits the muscles roll. And he's like, okay, well, I want to smash up the cart with my axe. I'm like, okay, roll damage. And he's like, and I want to use this power I have where I can use my muscles roll instead of my damage that the axe does. And I'm like, okay, roll it up. Boom, boom, max roll. He critted, maxed out the roll. I look at him, I'm like, you tell me what happens. And he's like, I turned it into wood chips. And he's just like, ah, and he starts making these motions like chop, 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 chop. And it's just like, you win. The bards are horrified. You annihilate the wagon explodes into wood chips. And I gave him this really great victory based on, you know, his awesome dice rolls. And that was a really cool moment. He was talking about that for 2 weeks, this victory he had.
Oh, no, you've got him telling character stories.
I know.
Well, oh, it's part and parcel with it.
Yeah, so, yeah, really good. It comes with that territory.
So that's where we ended the first game. And so we had the second game. And so now I have to deal with continuity here. It's like, well, how much is he going to remember?
Yeah.
And what do I do about that? So week rolls by, and does he even want to still play? You know, is because the little kids have the attention span of a goldfish sometimes. And so throughout the week, I'm kind of like, hey, you still want to play role play? Oh, yes, yes, I want to play. I want to play. It's going to be awesome. And so we roll around to family night again. It's like, Sky, you still interested in playing? Actually, I don't ask him that because he's pulled all the paperwork out. There's a part with a character portrait. I drew a little head because I can't draw it. Dawn drew her head and face and shoulders up because she's a really good artist. Sky drew Chris and the dog and the blacksmith shop and the anvil and the swords and the weapons and all that. He drew basically this like diorama of his whole thing because he's really into
pile
the character.
Pile of wood chips over in the
pile back. Of wood chips, yeah. And some crying bards and stuff. Yes. We started playing and I did the old who remembers what happened last week? Big mistake. Because he remembers everything. He's like, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. Those are the two worst possibilities.
Yes.
Nobody remembers anything. One person is Rain Man.
Yes. And so we had to like slow him down and eventually stop. Like, okay, we got it. We got it. Well, the plot goes on and they question the bards. And the bards are like, well, a dragon made us take the muffins, and we go from town to town stealing all their best muffins to give to this muffin stealing dragon. Sky gets pissed and he says, I'm so furious right now. We got to get that dragon. My furious levels are rising. And you guys can't see it, but I'm holding my hands like you hold a bat. And that's what he does, is he holds his hands as if you're holding a baseball bat. What he's doing is he's holding his battle axe as we go on. And again, more breadcrumbs in, but it's more like, go here. Here's the next town we're going to, and then we're going to meet the dragon there. So they go along the road to that. And his furious levels are right. As he's walking, he gets this look in his eyes, and he's like emoting what his character, Chris, is feeling. And he gets these narrow eyes. He's looking to the left and looking to the right, and he's holding his little right. battle axe.
Now, you're at a critical juncture here.
Yeah.
That's table acting. Acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm going to have to suggest something that's somewhere between B.F. Skinner and child abuse, which is at this point now, just to make sure,
mm-hmm.
I need you to take him to a Denny's. With his character sheet and yes. a placemat he can color,
mm-hmm.
and ask him what he wants to do, and you do that scene in 1984 until he gives you the answer you want to hear, which is he wants to play on that placemat because he's in Denny's, which is not an appropriate place to role play.
I think that he would totally be down with role playing in a Denny's, in a park, at Six Flags, in a swimming pool, anywhere.
Right. He's got he's kind of got the green eggs and ham of role playing going on.
Yes.
All right. Now, I understand he's new to the hobby. And so some of that new shine, you know, it's the first kiss kind of thing. But I want you to watch this, because if he turns into some kind of full blown, you know, coffee shop and Denny's sort of LARPer, then at some point, you know, you're going to have to look back and admit you made some mistakes here.
Yeah.
Some pretty serious mistakes.
Yeah. You know, it's like, who do you blame?
Yeah.
You blame.
There's going to be a point where you're going to be a dad on TV and be like, no, I don't blame rock music. I know exactly.
It's me.
I did this. I know exactly where it all went wrong.
I created this monster. So I wanted to lay down some subtlety in the plot to see if he would pick up on it. And so what I did is I have them walking along the road and they hear crying from the woods. And so
the deer. Leg bloodied, broken, and crying.
Deer hunter, you got this dog playing Russian roulette in this bar in Vietnam.
Wow.
Hey, I told you I wasn't afraid of dark here.
You have to lighten the tone here a little bit more, Slender Man.
So they go into the woods and they find a little girl.
Right.
And the little girl, she's got white hair and she has a lamb and she's crying and she's in a clearing in the woods. And I'm like, okay, how are he going to approach this? He's like, little girl, you know, what's happening? Don't worry, I'll protect you, sort of thing. And he's got some white knight in him, which is good. The little girl is like, oh, well, I'm lost and my lamb is lost and we are missing our mommy and we want to go home. And, they're like, okay, well, where's your home at? It's next town. Okay, that's where we're going anyway. We'll take a town. No problem. Oh, yes. And by the way, the whole reason I was running is because I was being chased by goblins. And then, boom, roll initiative. And so goblins jump them. And so they have to have this big fight and stuff. And Sky is, like, picking up and throwing goblins. And
there's
hilarious.
Another important lesson that needs to be taught while playing D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Because people say that one of the things that role-playing games teach is antisocial behaviors and, you know, law-breaking and disrespect for authorities. No. Mm-hmm. None of those are true. What D&D teaches you is a fundamental suspicion of old people.
Yes.
Because there is no such thing as just an old person.
Yeah, or just a child.
Exactly.
Well, and I was playing the trope of, she's just a child, wink, wink. Dawn wasn't picking up on it, which surprised me. So they beat up the goblins. They're going, and this was the first time an NPC had been with them for an extended period of time that wasn't like an encounter object puzzle sort of plot device or whatever. And so I wanted to see how Sky would work out with an engagement of role playing. And so it was a little girl, right? And so with a lamb, and she's innocent, and he's a kid, and so he can identify with that. And so I'm like, well, what are you doing? And where are you guys going? And oh, blah, blah, blah. Where are you from? And all this sort of stuff. And he's engaging and talking and stuff. And so he's like, oh, yeah. And this dragon. Oh, I'm so furious. This dragon stealing all the muffins. And she's like, a dragon would never do that. Dragons are really nice. And every time dragon came up in a negative light, the girl would instantly say, like, oh, no.
Why this bitch be such an apologist?
Yeah. Dawn didn't pick up on it for half an hour.
Dude, I picked up on that in three sentences.
Right. Yeah. And so
I think she white hair. I'm thinking we got a silver dragon here.
Yeah. And so finally, when Dawn picks up on it, they get to the town.
The lamb is lunch. This is the reason she hasn't mentioned being hungry.
Yes. So they finally get to the town and Dawn hits. She's like, oh. And she's like, so who is your mother? No, she doesn't say that because she's like, she's convinced that the girl is the dragon who is stealing the muffins.
Right.
And so they get to this town, right? And the ranch, I guess, is what you'd have sheep on, is just outside of town. But they get to town. Town's on fire. Panic in the streets. Goblins have taken over the town. And there's a cart in the street that is filled with muffins, right? There are the muffins. It's the goblins took the muffins. And so they're like, well, where the hell is this dragon? So they go down there and they beat up some goblins, countering stuff. And then the goblin shaman king comes out and he has this staff. And the staff has a dragon on it and a jewel and blah, blah, blah. And he summons forth the dragon. And this dragon comes, a big white dragon, matches the same hair color as the girl. Sky's still not getting it. And the dragon comes out and it's got this like nose ring with a gem in it. And it's the same gem that's in the staff. Yeah, dragon staff. Goblins got it. Go attack. And so Dawn figures it out, pretty obvious. So Sky's like, oh, there's that dragon bad guy. Surround up all these bad guy goblins. And Dawn's like, maybe we should get the staff. You know, get that staff away from the goblin. You know, and so they did. They encounter and yada, yada, yada. The goblin, one of the skills that the brains thing has, or their kind of magic user, is like a polymorph. And you can turn somebody into a cat or a rabbit or a fish. And so I was playing the shaman off of the brains template, turns Dawn into a fish. And I'm like, haha, you know, that's pretty funny. We got a good laugh out of it. But I'm like, oh, crap. Well, what did I just do? There's all these goblins around a dragon, and I just turned the idea person into a fish. So my character, my character, who was the wizard, who was protecting the little girl, because that takes him out of the combat and takes him out of the spotlight, stands up and he casts reverse polymorph onto Dawn, and I just down her for a turn because she's like a fish and not a fish. I say scales are appearing on her and then going away, and she gets fish eyes and go back to human eyes, and it's like wow, 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 like that. And then while that's all going on, Sky is just
like that sound effect. Why do I suddenly feel like we're in this like psychedelic TV show, like we're on the island or something?
Mm-hmm. Well, and anyway, so Sky basically picks up the goblin, starts punching him until candy comes out, and then and Dawn turns back into a woman and picks up the staff, and I don't really actually remember what happens. They get the nose ring out of the dragon. And so the dragon, like,
now he has a job and a haircut.
Yeah. Yes. And so the dragon,
it's respectable,
goes up, flies up, and then because my character isn't protecting the little girl, puts a little girl in her claw and flies off in the direction of the sheep ranch. And Sky, Dawn's like, oh, mother, dragon, daughter, dragon, click, 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 I figured it out. Sky still does not understand the tropes because he doesn't have any experience with it. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things is if you do this, you have to understand that kids are smart, but they don't have experience. So they don't have all this file of tropes in their head mm-hmm. that people follow when they tell stories. So to him, dragon's still a bad guy. And so it's like, the dragon kidnapped the little girl. And he said, I'm at maximum furiousness.
Don't make me assume my ultimate form.
I know. It was like that. And I'm like, I'm so furious. And then Dawn kind of had to do a, honey, the dragon is not a bad guy. And they're like, oh, really? And so they get the muffins from the cart and they scare off all the goblins. And then they go to the sheep farm. And the sheep farm, there's the little girl playing, and then there's her mother, who is a, quote, air quotes, human with big white hair. And so it's the you've won, we're pinning the medals on everybody except the Wookiee, and, you know, it's just...
the dog. It's the dog.
Yeah.
The dog doesn't get a medal because they're too f***ing afraid to get near him.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. So...
That dog.
There are too many medals getting handed out. They're losing their significance.
Yes.
So,
but man, everybody clapped when he roared.
And so they get it, and I enchant Sky's favorite battle axe so that it's on fire, and that's really cool and really wows him. And I enchant Dawn's bow, and that's really cool. And I end on a joke where my character, the senile old man, the dragon lady's like, well, and what do you want? And he's like, can I have a muffin? And then that's where I ended.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, it was a really great success, although we did have to explain to Sky that the lady was the dragon.
Right.
And that the daughter was her child dragon. And ha, 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 there's a reason they're on the sheep farm. They eat the sheep. And, you know, and they're
just
friends.
Just like the rest of the humans.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
They're Greek.
Yeah, exactly. So,
oh, okay.
So, yeah, and no, in the end, he had a really, really good time. And I'm like, well, what do we want to do next week? Do we want to play Uno? He's like, no, we want to play more roleplay games. I want to play Chris again. And so now tomorrow I have to, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm thinking about doing something like a sort of De Los De La Muerte sort of skeleton.
Whoa.
Comes up. Sort of I have this idea about dancing skeletons that's kind of percolating right now. But I have to give a shout out to the forums, though, because I posted this on our forums and I'm like, here's what I'm doing. Here's the rules. Anybody see any big holes in the rules? My one pager. And here's kind of, whoa, what plot are you? Well, I'm doing this and this and this. And they're like, well, you should do a twist on it at the end. Instead of just a dragon, the dragon's a bad guy. Make it to where the dragon has babies and the dragon needs the muffins because they have to feed the babies that way. When
moral conundrum
on that. And so I did a little twist on that, changed it up a little bit, but and so that idea came directly from them. But no, it was a really good experience. I think as far as like lessons learned though goes, the big one is kids don't get tropes because they don't have the catalog of tropes in their mind yet. They figure stuff out.
I think the one away that's actually kind of a good thing for the GM, because this gives
all your dumb old jokes are funny again.
Well, not just that, but this also gives you a chance to realize which of your ideas are so freaking tired that every time you bust them out, everyone already knows what you're doing.
Yeah.
When you do that, just expect everyone's already going to a second guess you. Maybe it's a sign there's something a little bit tired about that.
No, if you decide to make your own rules, check them, double check them, have somebody else double check them.
Oh, yeah.
Because I did that. I checked them, double checked them, put them on the forums for other people to check. And when we played it, I did not have a mechanic for bad guys being able to hit the players. Players had 10 different ways to hit the bad guys. Bad guys had no mechanical way to hit and inflict damage on the players. And so I had to like really fudge that.
Right.
But okay, so I gave this big, long, gigantic story. What happened over 2 weeks? What do you guys see in it? What advice could you give me to make it better?
Well,
what lessons learned?
Let me speak to kind of the idea in general and start by saying that, of course, every kid's going to be different.
Absolutely.
There are things that you just described that when the day comes that whether it's with me or without me, you know, whether Christine and Adam do it with me or without me, when they decide to introduce Eli to role-playing games, I think there are some of those ideas that will definitely carry over, some that won't, because he's a different human being. It's no different than adults. I mean, know your group. In this case, your group just happens to be somebody who's very young and therefore maybe a little bit less predictable because they're still figuring out who they are in a much bigger way than the average adult is. I think that one of the things that you said that really hit me is an awesome idea, provided it's kept within measure, is to have some objectives to figure out what it is you want to get out of this, what it is you want the child to get out of this. And I think you can get to a point where you're over-engineering, or I think you get to a point where you're scripting this experience to the point that you're not just letting them have fun with it. But it doesn't hurt to have a few really a mission statement, if you will.
And if the kid does not meet your objective, it's not their fault.
Well, and on top of that, I mean, look.
Some things fail.
Well, and I mean, just as we say amongst more aged gamers, there's no such thing as wrong, bad fun.
Exactly.
If the kid's having fun with it, they've succeeded at a role-playing game, even if you're like, okay, next time we're just going to sit around and have family Valium night. Because that went too crazy or whatever. But I think that was great. I loved that you gave him some birth, gave him some room to maneuver, but also gave him some boundaries, some restrictions. You taught him the game side of it. That's a valuable life skill. I mean... That's what game theory is. Is a guy, he actually looked at poker, but what he said was, he said that, you know, really, life does work like a game in that people make all of these observations and calculations about why they would want to do something versus not do something and what they're willing to trade for something else. And the point being, there's great books out there on game theory if you're not familiar with it. But life in many ways does function. I'm not saying life is a game, but life does function in many ways like a game. Our social interactions do. And they have rules. They have boundaries. Mm-hmm. They have things that are acceptable and unacceptable. There's room to express yourself, and there's a point where you've gone too far.
Right.
You need to kind of rein back some of your ideas or not be so honest with what's on your mind at the moment. I think something else that's very important is give them a hand in designing the setting. Mm-hmm. You let him pick the dog.
Yeah.
I don't know what the process was for picking fantasy. I don't have any objection to fantasy. Mm-hmm. But I think if I was to do it, one of the things that I would say is, well, maybe I wouldn't. I don't know. Because I'm trying to think, like, would I say, what kind of things do you want to play in?
Yeah.
But because they don't know what's possible, they might fall back on something like whatever it is they're into. Well, I want to do Thomas the Train or Ninja Turtles or whatever it is they happen to do. And I'm not.
Nobody wants to do the Caliou role-playing game.
Yeah. And that's.
Every parent just sighed. And
because
was
you
like,
don't like French Canadians? Is that why?
Yes. Absolutely. Okay.
That's fine.
They're communists.
So.
I see.
I think there's an up and down, but I would, once again, I think it doesn't hurt to throw out some ideas.
Yeah.
And then let them shape them or request things they want to see in there or take things, you know, they're interested in and find some way to incorporate.
I didn't ask him what he wanted to play as far as like that goes. I chose fantasy because it was quick, it was easy, and it's accessible. It's very relatable.
Yeah.
Especially sort of a Gennaro, the high. It was high fantasy. I mean, we're not talking unicorns and stuff, but it had goblins and dragons in it.
Right.
But I didn't ask him because it would have either been big giant robots, Transformers, or, you know, actually, I know what he was said. It would have been Minecraft. That was another thing that I had to do. The kid's obsessed about Minecraft, as kids get obsessed about things. And I had to make it real, real super clear to him, this isn't Minecraft. You know, we're playing this game, but this world isn't Minecraft. So if you say, well, I'm going to look for a creeper or an Enderman, or I'm just going to go and lay down an anvil and beat out a sword in the middle of a road, that isn't a thing here. This is totally different and doesn't relate at all. And it took a couple of times explaining that, but then he got it. And,
right.
And because he's like, well, and, you know, is there a creeper? And he's like, no, it isn't Minecraft. And he's like, okay. And he even said a couple of times, like, well, I would do this, but it isn't Minecraft, so I'm going to do this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that was actually a good thing to do because you're then now challenging him to try and think outside of those current obsessive boundaries that he wants to, you know, that he wants to stay in, because you know the end result that he's going to end up enjoying this, or at least that's what the hope is. And to push him a little bit in that direction, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing that kind of stuff and with anything along in that process.
Well, and that's something that I think kind of bears underlining is that we often try to think about interacting with people that saying yes is what increases creativity. Mm-hmm. But necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
I think sometimes saying no is what pushes creativity. If you say no, you cannot play. For my nephews, it would be Ninja Turtles, Ninjago.
Yeah.
But I think they're just now getting into Minecraft because I got Adam into Minecraft. So that one came from the top down instead of the bottom up.
Yeah.
But that's what it would be. Yeah, like Chris said, by you saying, no, you can't do this or that, you force them to kind of think in some new directions and to look at some new possibilities and to consider some new direction, as opposed to just falling into these same old ruts. That's one of the great things about role-playing is this an exercise in sympathetic thinking. What would it be like for somebody who is in a different set of circumstances and is in fact a different person? They are not me.
Yeah.
You want to think like somebody else in some other set of circumstances. And role-playing games are a great tool for that. And if you say yes to everything, you never get that. Mm-hmm. Because somebody engineers their own circumstances.
Yeah.
And so you never have to do a sympathetic thinking because they never go through success or loss apart from the ones they would write for themselves anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up just because I got to watch length here a little bit because of Through the Con coming up. I love you guys, but editing does take a bit of time. So yeah.
I was about to ask you, like, we turn this into a two-parter?
Yeah, I don't want to do that. So anyway, We might come back to this. This might yet be a two-parter. Mm-hmm. Because based on what the audience has to say, based on ideas that come back to me from my friend's family, from the other hosts, we might come back and talk about this more, but I don't want to turn this episode into a two-parter.
Right.
So we are going to wrap this one up here. Once again, thank you guys for tuning in. Check the show notes for all kind of stuff, for Reign of the Descendants, for some Fear the Con links. Mm-hmm. I might put some stuff out there for Stuart Robertson's Pocket Mods if you want a one-page role-playing game because you don't want to write your own because you're not an award-winning RPG author.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Who writes big mechanical holes in his game. And I'll also give Dan the link to the forum post I made that actually has those rules and the plot synopsis in there as well.
I did not see that thread, so yeah, definitely submit link. So anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week, great games, and for those of you that are coming, a great Fear the Con, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.